IRS have for identity theft victims?
If you suspect you're a victim of tax-related identity theft, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn how to prevent potential refund fraud and protect your tax account. At the IRS, combating tax-related identity theft is a top priority, and we are committed to prevention, detection, and assisting victims. And we're working with law enforcement to catch the criminals. For more info, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn what the IRS is doing to help protect you.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh.
I was drinking some kind of powdered orange juice. Well, she's a housewife. And her husband's with the night shift at the plant for 30 years. They got a nice little trailer in a nice little court. And a poodle they love like a child they never had. They go to the VFW club on Friday night. She gets a sludge in fest and some fries from the kitchen. Tip the waitress 50 cents. Has her hair done the same way that she has for 30 years. Some say life's useless, it's born, it's dull. But she's happy, she's satisfied, and nearly every day she cries when she remembers the day that Ayla's died. She doesn't covet what she doesn't have. She paints ceramics and bowls twice a month. She goes dancing with her husband when I can, or to the wrestling matches at the local arena. Some say her life's useless, it's fun, it's dull. But she's happy, she's satisfied. Nearly every day she cries when she remembers the day that Elvis died. She doesn't color what she doesn't have. Cause she's happy, she's happy, she's happy. Randy. Some say life's useless, but she's happy, she's satisfied, and nearly every day she cries when she remembers the day that Elvis died. She doesn't covet what she doesn't have, cause she's happy, she's happy, she's happy. And nearly every day she cries when she remembers the day.
WRCT, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
On this useless night, with you so far away, I stand in front of this Ferris wheel, and I wonder, what am I doing here? And I wonder, what am I doing here? And all the drunks just stumble by
shell. She said, don't give me no lines and keep your hands to yourself. Keep your hands to yourself. Your hands to yourself.
We all make choices about alcohol. Kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad. Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em. Remind me about that party again.
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations, and they want honest answers in everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
This is Ariana Bench with Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh.
My name is Tom Lizak. I am a teacher at Northwest High School. I've got a lot of different social studies courses over my career, which has been 30-plus years at this point. One of the classes that I teach is really kind of a passion of mine is a local history class, which I had Andrew in, and with his love of history, he's actually become a great resource, you know, for the class, and we've had some pretty good ideas that I think we'll talk about here momentarily.
My name's Andrew Trench. I had Mr. Lissette 7 years ago, which is crazy because it's 2036 now.
Seven years ago.
But ever since, I've come in and given a couple presentations to the class that I used to have. And this past summer, we were talking about, we want to make some sort of podcast video series, and I think we will. But it's, you know, getting it off the ground is the hardest part.
Yes.
But we have a solid
start.
Yeah,
solid foundation.
I remember when you were probably in high school, and I was probably in middle school, but I remember helping him rehearse for his first presentation to your class. So how long ago was that, and what was it like?
Probably, was it the year after I graduated, or was it like 2 years?
I think it was, well, it was the year after you worked for Westview Borough. So whatever that would have been, was that the summer that you, after you graduated, that you did that? Because
it was before COVID.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And so, okay. So it's been long enough that I don't remember.
So it was 2020 though.
Was it 2020?
I think so.
That would have been, yeah, 2019, 2020 year probably.
And how it started was the presentation that I give on Westview Ross was just an adapted version of my final for your class.
And I used to let my final exam or my final assessment for the course, which is called the History and Politics of the Keystone State and Steel City, was always a final PowerPoint presentation. It was totally wide open for student choice as long as it was somewhat applicable to what we were doing in class. So we had kids do, over the years, you know, Kennywood Park or pick a famous Pittsburgh pirate like Roberto Clemente. But yeah, Andrew did Westview Park. And, you know, one of the best presentations is kind of what I expected and what he always delivers. And Andrew also started a history club. So I think we had a little bit of a connection through that. You know, Andrew has a great rapport with quite a few social studies teachers. So, you know, I don't remember how it actually came to be that he came in for the first time, but I'm always happy to have him. And he's gone from doing Westview Borough history to incorporating some Ross Township history to Westview Park for a full 40 minutes, and then the Gilded Age, which is, you know, which is fantastic. So he's going to be teaching the course by the time I retire.
Yeah. Real quick, because I always get to hear about Andrew's historical interests. Do you guys want to talk about what your main historical interests are? Because I study history too, and I was just sitting in your class listening to his presentation about Pittsburgh history. I love Pittsburgh history. So.
Yeah, I personally, I mean, I have a lot of areas of history that I really enjoy. I also teach a criminology class, but I enjoy the 1960s. I've always enjoyed like the Civil War and the Wild West and World War II from a personal topic standpoint. But my favorite's always been Pittsburgh history, and I think this is how we came to the idea of what we are trying to do here is that, you know, you drive around and you see all these names of things, and there's all these little interesting facts, which is why I have always enjoyed history. So, you know, when you tell me H.J. Heinz and Heinz 57, it's 57 varieties. Well, they had 80 plus varieties whenever they came up with that slogan. It's just as simple as his favorite number, I believe, was 5, and his wife's favorite number was 7. So those are always the little things that I've always kind of enjoyed about history. And I think Andrew and I have talked about that and thought that, you know, anytime I share that information with people, they always seem to enjoy it, or at least we're going to pretend it. We thought it would be something fun to do, to kind of look into some name origins and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably why we. Well, I think that's probably why we. You had me come back, because there's a lot of overlap between the history that I like, because I also love local history, but I really enjoy early Pittsburgh history, like colonial times and, you know, French and Indian War, American Revolution, and that's where a lot of the names come from.
Yes,
that we have talked about. I mean, I also really enjoy Gilded Age history. I mean, I used to work at the Frick, which was really fun. And then I also really like Pittsburgh Renaissance history. It's very, I think it's kind of unique how Pittsburgh was able to intentionally clean itself up and pivot itself away from what it was known for. And it's still ongoing, so,
yeah,
you know, all of it. I just love Pittsburgh and love Pittsburgh history.
Yeah, we've gone from, you know, steel mills and to robotics and healthcare and movies and food. I heard a few years ago that outside of Atlanta, Pittsburgh had more millennials moving here than any other city in the country.
Interesting.
So, you know, I think it's just something we both shared an interest in, and, you know, like Andrew said, anywhere you go around, you see all these signs, and you wonder, and I've always recognized a lot of them, and, you know, working together, I've learned a lot more about some of the name origins. So that's really, I think, the theme of what we're trying to do here, which, again, I agree. So at some point, we'll get it off the ground. I think once we get it off the ground, it'll get rolling pretty easily. Yeah. So it's just a matter of coordinating that, finding the time, the jobs, the families, and everything else.
I think that's like the perfect spot to formally introduce what the project is, because you guys were talking about.
You came up with the working title. Where the streets.
Where the streets got their names. A little spin on YouTube.
Yeah.
But that's just a working title. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what we're going to actually go with here.
That's
just a wrap. Mm-hmm. And I think eventually, like, I think we're planning to start with downtown and then expand things to some more interesting, not more interesting, but some other interesting areas like Oakland. There's a lot of history with the names and so on. And we talked about the number of neighborhoods in the city and with the number of municipalities throughout Allegheny County, even getting into, you know, Butler and some of the surrounding counties. This is something that, you know, will probably be going on long after I'm gone, hopefully, which I hope is a long time from now.
So have you started doing, like, research or just, like, outlining what it's going to look like, or both?
A little bit of both.
Lots of research. I know I did a lot of research this summer. I finally just returned my library book last week from September, so I probably own it at this point. I think we have, like I said, I think we have a pretty good foundation to get started with both research and maybe a little bit of an outline. And I'm actually looking forward to doing the first thing. I know Andrew's got along with the technology aspect of it, which is totally out of my realm. So,
yeah, I mean, I think our focus for the first one will be downtown, because you can't really, you kind of have to start at downtown.
Sure, yeah.
And there's so many names. Every street downtown except for, you know, Fifth Avenue, the number of streets, every name has a meaning. I mean, we can't give the whole episode away, but what's a street that has a cool name origin downtown?
Could you tell me about Penn?
That's too easy. Brilliant Penn.
And I think one of the things that we talked about trying to incorporate, too, is even if there's not like necessarily a name origin, mm-hmm. you can get something in downtown, like Chinatown used to be, I believe, on Second Avenue downtown mm-hmm. in the 19-teens. It was a gang war, the Tong War, that, you know, part of it was going on in that that area of downtown. We've also talked about potentially doing special themed episodes, whether Ooh. It's like the Whiskey Rebellion or French Indian War, and things like that. But there's so much. I think part of it is all this decision paralysis. There's so much
info
out there. Like, what do you start with? What do you include? What do you ditch?
Yeah.
And I never want to ditch anything. So,
well, yeah, and downtown Pittsburgh, I think, is a great place to start because a lot of the names have to do with, you know, British or French figures, French Indian War and Revolution, and then also Native Americans. So maybe we can give one away. You know, Allegheny, Monongahela, and Ohio, the three rivers, are all Native American words. Mm-hmm. And that's where it starts, and that's where Pittsburgh starts.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
If you look at the Monongahela, it means fallen mountains. And actually, right where the Homestead Grays Bridge is, formerly the High Level Bridge, up until about 100 years ago, that was only, you know, you could walk across it because of the banks falling in. So those are kind of things that kind of just gives you little insight of the kinds of things we're looking to include, I think.
I have one question that it might be off topic, but I was thinking about it during your presentation. Why was there never a building built on it, even though there were so many big names that could have bought the land and built it?
You mean like a skyscraper?
Yeah.
Well,
flood.
Well, that, I mean,
flood.
they had, I mean, it still floods.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, look at the water. I mean, the point used to be occupied by many buildings, warehouses, mills, tenement housing. And then during the Pittsburgh Renaissance in the 40s and 50s, they bought up that land on purpose and set it aside for a park. Now, but they did build some structures on the, you know, further back from the river, like Gateway Center.
Yeah,
that's
all
so
there.
They did build some things on it. Yeah, but they envisioned it being more of a park. But that was, again, I could talk about it all day. The Pittsburgh Renaissance is really cool because it was a couple of political, and one of the Mellon family members, I forget his name.
Richard K. Mellon, I believe, and David L. Lawrence.
They had the idea, let's do this. Let's revitalize Pittsburgh, which to have the forethought to do that is pretty crazy.
And one of their plans was to put big fans up on Mount Washington. Well, I don't know if it was their plan specifically, but one of the plans to clean up the city was to blow the smoke away.
Mm-hmm.
And as Andrew said in his presentation in my class earlier today, it's Frank Lloyd Wright, I believe, when he flew over Pittsburgh. I mean, it was just so filthy. That what did he say?
I don't know if it was Frank Wright. I think the quote was a lot earlier, but I mean, hell with the lid taken off.
Yeah.
I think that was like 1860s.
Oh,
no, something
yes,
Wright described.
Yeah.
Frank Lloyd Wright flew over in the city at one point. But this is stuff we'll find out and learn more about.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk more about the Pittsburgh Renaissance, or will that give too much away?
No, I mean, we haven't really drafted an episode about the Pittsburgh Renaissance.
No, specifically. No.
I mean, the Pittsburgh Renaissance, I don't know if there's any street names that are named after figures, but obviously the David Lawrence Convention Center. Mm-hmm. And
what was, like, the main goal of it? Because I don't know that much about it as an idea. Like, what was...
Just to clean up the city, just to try to, you know, clean it up, get rid of the reputation that it had. And you saw, like, you know, some Gateway Center down by the point, the Fort Pitt Bridge and Tunnels, the Parkway was all a part of that.
Coincided with building the interstates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they reconfigured 376. They eventually built 279.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pittsburgh Renaissance also wasn't all positive because they did, during that time, destroy some areas of Pittsburgh, like the Lower Hill District.
Yep.
You know, the East Street Corridor when they built 279. So it's not all, you know, it's not all good.
Yeah.
But by and large, I think the goal was to clean up the city. Yeah, clean up the city.
Yeah, kind of rebrand the city. And then in the 80s, there was the second Renaissance, a Renaissance 2, where you had the PPG and 279, Bank.
That was the 80s. But they were, they've been on and off working, messing with that idea since the 60s.
Yep.
They just took forever to do it.
Yep.
What have you guys both learned from each other?
When I was in school, I already had a love of history, and pretty much every history teacher, but especially Mr. Lisak, just helped it grow more. It's true, you know, and that's why I majored in it in college. I don't regret it one bit. I think just, I can't pinpoint a specific thing. I mean, I did learn a lot about how government in Pennsylvania functions in your class, which I didn't really know a lot about before. And then when I started working in local government, it was like, oh, yeah, this is very interesting. Why aren't more people involved in this? I mean, there's too much.
Yeah, I think, you know, you kind of, it's almost vice versa here, where Andrew was such a good student. He always was so consumed with the history. He always wanted to talk more about it and learn more about it and always went above it and beyond as a student, and still does so when he comes back. I told him repeatedly that I think he would make an excellent teacher himself. But I think one of the things that if you saw maybe last period, which for all of you listening, you probably don't know what that is, but in high school, the class period, Andrew did his Gilded Age presentation. I always let him roll, but every once in a while I'll interject something, and I feel like we kind of flow off of one another very well, feed off of one another very well.
That's important too, because not a single, there one person can't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
It is impossible. So it's nice when I come into the class. I like when Mr. Lisak will interject with something that maybe I didn't even think of because, you know, you get in the zone. Or I love when somebody asks a question and then it kind of forces you to maybe pivot a little bit. Because one, there's nothing to shame, nothing to be ashamed about if you don't know something.
No, like,
you can't.
And I tell those students that all the time, I'll ask you questions, I don't know the answer to it. And, you know, when I first started teaching, it wasn't in the book that I had, and I had to go to the Northland Library, and then I had to go to the Carnegie Library. And if I couldn't find it in the book, sometimes I didn't get an answer. Now I can get an answer for most kids' questions by the end of the period. I always tell them, I don't know, I have to look into that. I tell them, I think it's this, but let me get back to you, and I'll let you know for sure. I think we work very well together. Like I said, we feed off each other. And from my standpoint, I've always enjoyed history more as like the storytelling aspect of it. So, you know, I try to tell stories with history. And I think Andrew does the same thing, which is what makes us very compatible. And then, you know, we also have our personality differences that I think mesh well. I'm a bit of a clown. Andrew's my straight man.
or I fool people.
Yeah.
Thinking of you.
Yeah. What I think is really pretty cool to watch, and I'll be a little sappy for a second, is whenever I first watched Andrew present, I never had to in class, but you know, I came into your class maybe once or twice when I was in high school to watch Andrew present. And, you know, when you would interject, you know, he got a little bit nervous at first. He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But, like, this is the first time I've seen him present since I was in high school, which was, like, probably 3 or 4 years ago when I watched him. And it's, the dynamic is way different now. Not that the dynamic between you two has, like, changed or anything, because it might have, but
I'm still
going to
call him Mr. Lisak.
I'm still going to call you Mr. Lisak.
And I still try to get you guys to stop doing that. I mean, I came to your wedding a couple of months ago. Call me Tom, please. Tommy, or even just Lisak.
Maybe.
But it's cool to see, you know, him get even better at what he's doing, and, you know.
Well, it happens the more you do it, the more you learn, and the more confident you are, the more times you've been through it. And he, like I said, he does a great job with it. And when I interject, and I think Andrew knows this now, I think maybe a lot of times high school kids think when you're interjecting, you're being critical. And I'm more trying to just have almost like a discussion about it, where I hear something that piques my interest, I'm gonna interject. And if it's a formal presentation, probably not as much or at all. But you know, when you did like what you did today, and I know now he knows that I'm not being critical at all. I learned, as like he said, you can't know everything. I learned as much from him, if not more, than he's probably learned from me.
It was really nice to hear the high school students as well have a lot more questions than I remember.
You have a great group this year.
That's the nice thing about this course is there's only one section. I usually have 15 to 20 kids in it. But the vast majority of kids that I have in the class are truly interested in Pittsburgh history. And that's great. I encourage kids not just to ask Andrew questions, but ask questions of me every day. And I like giving questions, especially if I don't know the answer to, because that's something else that I can learn. I try to learn new things every single day.
What's your favorite question to be asked in terms of like maybe Pittsburgh history or what haven't I asked yet that you think you would want to be asked?
Well, I used to give tours at the Frick, and I talk about it a lot because it was a really cool experience, and I'm really glad I did it, even though I'm still not there. I loved it when people would ask questions that were totally unrelated, but not like stupid questions. Okay. There's no stupid questions, but a question like, why is the wall red? That's not an interesting question. But when somebody would ask me a very interesting question that wasn't related to what I was talking about, but is still relevant overall.
Like you could tell they're looking at the house, like still listening to you, but looking around the house, and they're like...
And I've experienced that with your class this year, where like, I think the last presentation I gave, somebody asked me a question about the trolleys, and I went down a little rabbit hole about trolleys, even though that wasn't the focus of the presentation. I like that, where they're like, wait a second, what about that thing you mentioned?
And you came back today with some maps of the...
I did that.
And that's why Andrew would make a great teacher.
I didn't even know those maps existed.
I got those from an NPR article that was really good, really detailed.
But I mean, I think I would enjoy the same kind of questions. Anything that's going to make me think a little bit, anything that's going to challenge me, anything that's going to teach me something new. And I like the questions that maybe aren't entirely on topic or on subject, because at least it shows me that people are paying attention, people are listening. And, I think that's what we want to try to do with this project, is try to make history fun. Because there are a lot of people that just don't like history, and they think it's all about learning names and dates and things like that. But when you really understand that the history of, why is this here? Why is this called this thing? That's where I think it starts to draw people in a little bit, especially when you're talking about a city with so much pride as Pittsburgh. You asked at the end of your presentation, what's the legacy of the Gilded Age? I think part of it is the work ethic of the city and the togetherness of the city most of the time, and things like that, among other things. So, I think we're just trying to hopefully bring a little bit of entertainment and knowledge to anybody that is kind enough to listen.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it better. I mean, my goal when I give the presentations, and I think, why does this matter? I know why it matters. It's important to me, but why should somebody else care about what I'm about to tell you? Why is it relevant? I mean, I think that's kind of, if we, with our show, exploring why things are the way they are, why that street is named that, who are these people? I mean, they have a lasting impact on our world today, even if it's just a street is named after them. Mm-hmm. How many times in your life have you driven up and down McKnight Road? That was a person, a family, a farmer who settled that area. I mean, and his legacy lives on in in that name. Everybody says it probably once a day in the North Hills.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to think about.
Are you guys going to make connections to, like, today, like, headlines, or is it just going to be based in...
What do you mean, headlines?
Maybe not headlines is the right word, but, like, modern day...
Things that are going on.
Things going on today.
If we can.
Yeah, I think whatever...
We're relevant.
Yeah, we're relevant. I think that's kind of what we talked about here, you know. Even with downtown, there might be some buildings that are on certain streets downtown.
Yeah.
Maybe it's important to talk about how this building got its name. So, you know, I think the key to teaching in general is just to make things as relatable as possible.
Yeah. Get people interested.
Get people interested. And the more people can relate to something, the better they understand it, the more interest they have in it. Which is, you know, even with today, but, you know, some of when I piped it a couple of times, and I'm used to teaching teenagers, so I try to get them to think about things from different perspectives. So we thought about, you know, some of the numbers, hey, put in perspective, that's the population of Ross Township. That's the population of, that's half the population of Westview.
This amount of money.
Bringing up Elon Musk.
Putting it into relatable terms.
Yeah, that's something that, like, I will try to do, that my professor at school will try and push us to do. We work with middle schoolers, so it's a little bit different content that we do, but...
Yeah, it's the same thing. Maybe you just try to make it relatable to their age and their experiences.
Exactly.
And again, something that even they can relate to today. I kind of thought of that when you asked about the modern takes on things, incorporating modern things. I think if you can, you know, teach history using things from the present, it definitely makes it more impactful. It makes it more relatable.
Yeah, it makes people realize that history is relevant.
Yes.
Why does this matter?
I'll just say I've enjoyed what we've done to this point. I wish that we had done more. You know, to be honest, a lot of that's on me. But just, like I said, it's unfortunately sometimes life is getting in the way of things here and making some progress. But
there's,
I think
we'll
eventually get it rolling out. I think by this summer we might be able to get something, get the first one out, maybe the first one out as much as we can.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Absolutely. Thanks
it's
for
been great.
Out.
This has been Aubrey on a Bench with
Tom
Lissack and Andrew Bench on Forbes Avenue, WRCT Pittsburgh.
I guess we should have said who Forbes was since the show is
complete. Why don't we talk? Why don't you go ahead and say something about what Forbes Avenue?
That's an easy one.
General John Forbes.
Yeah.
General Young.
The name of our show.
At the time of the French and Indian War. And actually, when it was marched towards the Carb. That's made a turnpike about halfway.
Is that the
Forbes Road?
It's right.
A turnpike.
And no. Was part of it the Lincoln Highway? Route 30?
Is that the old turnpike? We haven't gotten that far yet. We haven't gotten that far out of downtown.
But he, am I correct? He replaced General Braddock?
Yeah,
Braddock was killed. So he's, you know, a pretty important figure in the French and Indian War around here.
Yeah. There's another one, Braddock, an old town named Braddock.
Yeah.
I visited his grave in eighth grade.
Braddock Avenue, and it is an interesting story.
Yeah.
As is, you know, George Washington and being in this area, and a lot of the names, again, a lot of the French and Indian War names.
Most of the streets downtown, we're not going to talk about all of them, but Stanwyck Street, Fort Duquesne, Fort Pitt, Forbes Avenue, Ross Street, I believe. I mean, they're all French and Indian War figures.
There really is so much that people just don't realize.
Yeah, that's the goal of our show.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, thanks.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Today, one in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us don't know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma and advance mental health. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
WRCT Pittsburgh. It's more fun when it doesn't make any sense.
I'm the sun and the air, all the shyness that is criminally vulgar. I'm the sun and air.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I did not know Jeffrey Epstein. I never went to